So my name is Dr. Diana Partovi. I'm a clinical neuropsychologist, so I do a lot of assessments for adults with autism. And the adults that I see tend to have lower needs, so they got missed when they were younger in school. They tend to have strong verbal speaking skills, so again, they weren't caught usually in school. But they have a lot of the social communication differences, the repetitive, restrictive behaviors, all those things that are in the DSM. That's one side of my practice, is I do a lot of autism, ADHD, and we know there's a lot of people who have both ADHD and autism, and then learning disorder evaluations. And then I also see people who might be having trouble with memory, or other types of thinking, and I'll see them for assessment. On the other side of my private practice, I go into companies. So I do about 150 presentations a year, and I go talk to companies about neurodiversity in the workplace. So I talk to them about what it might be like to be neurodivergent at work, how important it is to have neurodivergent people, so autistic, ADHDers, in the workplace. They bring something so incredible to teams. But I also talk about how to support those employees and to make sure if they need a quieter space to work, for example, or they need to communicate by writing instead of speaking. So we really are trying to educate employers about that, and then also make sure that when autistic or other neurodivergent folks are in the workplace, they have the support they need, and most importantly, they're valued. And I think that's so important. I was late diagnosed autistic, so I was diagnosed about 3 years ago. My dad is autistic, my son is autistic, and I'm embarrassed to say this as a psychologist, but I really did not think about myself as autistic. I think because a lot of us don't really know what that looks like for people who have maybe more speaking or verbal speaking abilities, or women. Women, it can look really different.
We get underlooked because our criteria is different. What we do is different.
Yeah.
It's different. Different.
Yeah, it's different, exactly. And I think we're also learning about autism. You know, before there was kind of Asperger's and autism, now there's just autism. I think that will continue to change. But today I want to talk about managing criticism, because for autistic folks, criticism can be a lot more difficult for a number of reasons. And some of the interventions that work for autistic folks are not the interventions that therapists normally go to. And so we'll talk about both why it's difficult, and then we'll spend a lot of time on interventions. I'm so pleased to see that there are so many family members here. Even if you are not autistic, as a family member, this is going to help with criticism, because really criticism is not fun for anyone, so these strategies are really for anyone. And I'm sorry I have to be kind of behind the podium. So the first question I have is, I want to hear from anyone who feels comfortable sharing, what do you notice when someone criticizes you? Yeah. Yeah. So maybe feeling like it's condescending, or their help feels condescending, or maybe it doesn't feel helpful. Yeah. What else do people notice?
For me, thoughts that come up is that I feel like they suck, and also thoughts is like, oh, I may have done something wrong, or that I blame it on my autism. Feelings that I feel anger, and I just feel anger and upset with myself. I take it out of myself in a physical sensation, maybe my heart rate, or like my stomach can turn into knots when it comes to the negative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that was beautiful.
I second that.
Yes, you second that. So
you do that so you don't take it out of other people, so you don't want to draw attention to yourself because you're autistic. Like, oh, I'm just,
So that was beautiful. You gave me the thoughts, the emotions, and the physical sensations. Any other people have other experiences, thoughts, emotions, or physical sensations? No.
I sometimes feel angry at the person who criticizes me.
Yeah, angry at the person who criticized you. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I did the best I could. Okay.
Exactly.
I'm sorry, it's not good enough for you, but
yep.
Why didn't you tell me this before?
Yeah.
And then I'll say stuff like, "Will you do that? Why are you being such an idiot?" I'm like, "I'm trying."
Right. So we see anger. Any other feelings that people, emotions they feel when they get criticized?
If it accumulates, it makes it exhausting. I mean, it just
yes. It
makes me go on the opposite meltdown, and I go to sleep. And
yep.
I can't really describe. I like that. It's like getting hit with a baseball bat or something. Like,
yeah.
You don't really know you got hit, and I don't know why I feel sick.
Yeah.
But I get like really sick.
Yeah.
And you know, I get knee pain. Right now I have knee pain because I'm pulling a lot of criticism.
Holding a lot of criticism. So you're talking about kind of autistic burnout. I don't know if everybody here has heard of autistic burnout, but we'll talk about why that happens a little bit. You're talking actually about physical pain in the body.
Yeah, I get lots of physical pain in the body.
Yep.
Social rejection causes me. My stomach to go nuts, gives me pain here, back pain, all over my body.
Yep.
Lifetime of social rejection.
Yep. So, and there's a reason why people feel pain too. Any other physical sensations that people feel when they get criticized?
I get really sick.
Sick?
When I'm vomiting or overwhelmed.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And body goes into fight or flight mode. Heart rate goes up, breathe faster, feel hot.
Yep.
Sweating.
Yep. That. Everybody know what fight or flight feels like? Yeah, it's that kind of your heart starts to race. Your palms might sweat. For me, it's always a stomach ache. It's always been a stomach ache ever since I was a little girl. It could be like sometimes people describe a tightness in their chest. And this fight or flight, we'll talk a little bit more about how that leads to exhaustion, because a lot of autistic folks go into fight or flight more often. They're more escalated in terms of how much that physical sensation impacts them. And it takes longer to kind of go back to rest and relax.
Is it normal to feel constantly fight or flight even in social situations? I'm feeling that right now.
Yep.
It's like, always when I'm around people, I get nervous because I'm like, I think like a million thoughts. What if I say the wrong thing? Did I say this? Did I say please and thank you? Like, you're constantly thinking of these multiple things while you're talking to them.
That is normal. It's definitely normal for autistic folks and other neurodivergent folks, and we'll actually talk about why that is. So, yeah.
Did anybody say they feel embarrassed?
Yeah, does anyone feel embarrassed?
Exactly.
Yeah? How about shame? Anyone feel shame? Yeah. So we saw...
Well, at least it's a headache.
Or a headache, yeah. And another thing about some autistic folks is that there's a different way of experiencing emotions. We might call that alexithymia. So some autistic folks may feel anger and kind of happiness, but maybe they don't feel shame, or maybe they don't feel jealousy, but maybe they get a headache, or maybe they get a body ache, or maybe their stomach hurts. And so they
don't understand how.
By headache, I meant problem.
Oh, you meant a problem. Oh, okay, so see, I took you literally. You meant a problem. So it could actually be a literal headache, or it could be like this is a headache for me, right?
Or you know you feel something, like you don't know what it is or how it feels.
Right?
You feel something.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about...
Fear, what's the something I feel afraid.
Afraid, yeah, exactly. A feel, and that's your fight or flight getting activated. It tells us that our body is in danger, even when our body is not in danger. And like I will go into fight or flight if I don't want to gross anyone out, but like if I bite into a food that has something crunchy in it that I wasn't expecting, my body goes into fight or flight. I don't know why it does that. I'm not in any danger. It's been like that my whole life. If I did that when I was a kid, I would immediately throw up that food.
Is it because, you know, like with autistic people, certain textures just like,
yep. It's sensory. Yep, it's sensory differences. So let me go through kind of why criticism might actually be more difficult for autistic folks. So there's, and we'll go through each of these more in depth. There's often a history of being teased or bullied or singled out. I hear this a lot from my autistic clients. I feel like everybody else in a social situation has the instruction manual, and I didn't get it. I don't know what, you know, where I was supposed to pick that up, but everybody else kind of seems to know what to do or how to interact, and I don't have those instructions. We'll talk about language differences. How many people have heard of rejection-sensitive dysphoria?
What is that?
We'll talk about it. Okay, good. Not too many people have heard about this, so we'll talk about that. Intrusive thoughts, which you were just talking about, those thoughts that just keep popping into your head that you don't want there, that are often worry thoughts, and then a more active nervous system. So let's go into these a little bit more. So how many people in this room have been teased or bullied as a child?
Most of my life, even as an adult.
Yeah, right. So for autistic folks, often these teasing, bullying episodes, they're pretty intense, they're pretty frequent. And so a lot of times there's a big effort in the world not to draw attention to yourself so that you don't get teased or bullied. And so when somebody does criticize you, it can almost take you back to those times where you were maybe younger and you didn't really understand why people were teasing you or why they were, you know, why they were ganging up on you or things like that. So criticism can kind of trigger those feelings that we had. Yeah.
Could you also feel like you need to stand up for yourself when you want to like angrily?
Yep.
Act out because I'm not going to put up with this.
Yes. So she's saying, just in case, I don't know if people in the back can hear, but could you also, like, if you're being teased or bullied or criticized, could you also have that like anger reaction, like I want to lash out at you? Absolutely. And we're going to talk about that because sometimes that's what we want to do, but it's not really in our own best interest. So we'll talk about how to notice that. That kind of feeling, like I mentioned, that everyone else has the instructions. How many people have felt like that before?
All the time.
Yeah, okay.
Like,
so,
you'd be like, what did I do? Like,
you know what you did.
Yeah.
I don't know what I did.
I'll give you an example. When I was probably in third grade, and I just thought that every girl in my class was my friend. That's what I thought.
That's what I thought
friends were. So I had a list of all the girls in my class. There were probably like 13 or 14. And I told one of my friends that she moved up on the list from number 12 to number 7. And I thought I was being really nice to her because I thought she would be happy to hear that she had moved up the list. I didn't realize that was not socially, you know, maybe what a neurotypical person would do. I had no idea it would hurt her feelings. I really thought I was doing something nice to her. And so that's an example of like, whoa, okay, well, now I get that. I probably won't do that again. But I did that a lot when I was growing up. I stumbled a lot socially. This is another reason why criticism can be so hard.
Yeah, why can't they have us have an autistic interpreter for translate our language to theirs?
So
that's frustrating.
Let me stop and actually give you a really interesting, one of my clients just told me that she does this. Has anyone here used ChatGPT?
What's that
Someone.
Mean?
So ChatGPT is like an AI generator, or I don't know if it's AI, but somebody might be able to explain it better, but basically it's like Google on steroids. You can type in, like, tell me, here's what my client did. She said, I'm autistic. I just received this text from a friend, and she entered in the text. Tell me how a neurotypical person would translate this or how they would interpret it. Thank you. And then give me some ideas of how I should respond. Mind-blowing, right? So we could actually, it's not really an autism interpreter, but we are probably going to be using more tech like that to help neurotypical people understand a little bit more about those
honestly,
neurotypical
communities. Every time at the doctors, I'm so confused, and they ask, do you need an interpreter? And my mind, I'm saying yes, because I'm autistic, and
yeah.
I need some autistic interpreter.
Yeah, an autistic interpreter would be great. Yeah. So, but we know language differences can be really varied. So there might be folks in this room who feel like when they hear someone criticize them, it doesn't even actually hit them in the moment. But maybe it's later when you go home and the lights are off and it's dark and you go, oh, I think that person was kind of being mean to me, or I think that person was criticizing me. So the language processing might happen a little bit later. And often that's because the body is being bombarded by sort of sensory information, social expectations, all this other stuff. It's also true for a lot of autistic folks that they need more time to think about how they want to respond to criticism. So they might not be able to just in the moment blurt out how they feel, and maybe they don't want to respond verbally. Maybe they actually really communicate much better, or they only communicate like in writing or something like that. So the language differences can make receiving criticism difficult, and then it can also make responding to criticism a little bit more difficult. All right, let's talk about rejection-sensitive dysphoria. So this is not actually a diagnosis that we give people, but it's more like a syndrome of experiences that a lot of autistic and ADHDers notice. And I'm curious if anyone notices any of these. I'll kind of ask at the end. So the first thing people describe is when they get criticized, it is an intense emotional reaction. And sometimes it's immediate, or like I said, maybe it's later that night where you're like, oh, that person I think was actually criticizing me. It's intense, and it can be to rejection, actual rejection, but it can also be to what you think is rejection. The rejection then triggers feelings of shame. It could be anxiety, it could be sadness. The way my clients often describe it to me is pain in their body. You were talking about pain in your knees when you're dealing with like rejection or criticism. So it can actually be a physical pain when you're criticized. Sometimes this will even happen when somebody is saying something that could be like more neutral or more vague, but it's interpreted as criticism. And then what can happen is you might start to feel anxious or avoidant of future criticism. Like, well, I'm just not going to go to that social function because last time somebody said something to me, I didn't like their tone of voice. So I'm just not going to go anymore. I'm just going to avoid. And then what we also see is sometimes people will bend over backwards to try to avoid criticism. Sometimes we hear this called fawning. I don't know if anyone's heard that term before, but it can be like, I'll do anything. I won't tell you that I'm upset. I just don't want to create any conflict. So that's part of rejection sensitive. And then this can make it really difficult to like start tasks. So how many people here have known that you needed to write, let's say, a text to somebody, and you were afraid that you might say the wrong thing or write the wrong thing, so you just didn't do it?
Wait,
or it took you a long time.
Can you repeat the question?
How many have had, like, maybe you need to send a text to a friend. Maybe you even just want to say, hey, do you want to hang out? But you're so worried about rejection or saying the wrong thing that you just have a hard time getting started on that text. So it looks like, yeah. Yeah, so we might actually see difficulty starting a task if we're afraid there's going to be a rejection. Yes, did you have a question?
Oh, okay.
All right.
I have a question.
Okay, I'm going to have Nina actually ask first because she had her hand up first. So.
I'm interested more about that. You know, this is really interesting. Also interested in knowing more about sometimes viewing neutral or vague comments or actions of rejection.
So actually, here's a good example. Let's say I text my sister-in-law and she doesn't text me back. I might sit there and ruminate about that. Oh, I probably said something that upset her. Or she doesn't want to text me back. Or she doesn't want to hang out with me, whatever it is. This is kind of a neutral action. She just hasn't texted me back yet. I have no idea why. She actually is an ER doctor and she has 3 kids. And usually one of her kids is on her phone and sees the text and she never sees it. So usually that's why she hasn't texted me back, but my brain can go to like, this is rejection, this is, you know, something, yeah. So, yeah. Oh, sorry.
I want to just quickly add on to that. You know, my mom and I were arguing about this the other day, but, you know, I received a call, and I was driving, I didn't feel like taking the call, and I knew I'd get back, but I just declined the call, right?
Uh-huh.
You know, I actively declined it. I didn't just let go to voicemail.
Yeah.
My mom tells me, hey, that's rude, and I'm like, I don't think that's rude at all. Like, I think that's just, I think phones have gotten to the point where people just have an obligation to answer them.
Yeah.
And, you know, now's not a good time, but I'll get back to you later. I don't think that that's a rude thing to do by actively declining the call. I know this, like, this, the reason why this has to do with this topic is because, you know, maybe that could be perceived as rejection on the other end. It's
yeah.
Like, but ultimately, but it's I'm saving them time. Like, I don't want them to just wait up a bunch of rings just to, you
right,
know, I
right.
don't want to keep them guessing. I'll just say, hey, I'll get back to you later. Right? Like,
and those social interactions, even something as seemingly simple as answering a phone, can trigger, like, the nervous system. And so sometimes people prefer to communicate on their own terms. I don't want to answer it right this minute, but I'll listen to your voicemail. I'll give myself a minute to see what it is you want. I'll collect my thoughts, and then I'll call you back. Yeah. Yes.
I do have a question. How do we know which emotion we feel when we see rejection? If we can tell between anxiety or sadness is controlling our consoles?
So that is such a great question. And that feeling, it may look different for you than it does for me. So, and sometimes I actually have clients who say, I don't know what emotion it is that I feel. I just feel bad, or I just feel uncomfortable, or I just feel yucky. And that would fall under, this has emotion words, but it doesn't have to be any one of those specifically, but it could just be, someone said something to me and I just feel yucky about it or uncomfortable about it. I don't know if it's shame or embarrassment or anger. I just don't like the feeling I'm having.
Well, it's always getting better because sometimes anxiety can cause us to feel the other emotions when it's in control.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah? Yeah.
I have a question. Like, my dad's stepmom are very ableist and don't understand my autism. And my dad always wants a quick response. And with him, he makes me so, like, it feels like rejection, but at the same time, it's like he wants such a quick response. Since I have a process disorder, it's so hard for me to give him the response that he wants in the time of fashion rather than that. So I have to write down everything.
Yeah.
But he doesn't want to read it. He doesn't like to read it. So then I'm trying to figure out other way to do it without, and then he still gets mad. So then it's still.
So we have some strategies for that. We'll get to that too, because that's pretty common where people feel like, I hear this all the time. Clients will say, you know, I was talking to my parent or I was talking to my friend and they were upset with me for something and I just shut down and I actually couldn't respond. I got overwhelmed. And then they said, you're ignoring me or you don't care about me because you're not answering my questions. And actually in therapy, a lot of therapists get taught to tell clients, you know, never go to bed angry. How many people have heard that? Never go to bed angry. But for some autistic folks, we need that time to actually regulate our nervous system so that we can go back to the person and say, I heard what you had to say. I want to address it. I've had time to think about it. So it may just take a little bit longer. And we'll talk about how to advocate for yourself if that happens. And just really, a lot of it is about educating. We're not going to change our brains. We're not going to change our brains, but we can explain to people, this is how I communicate, or this is what I need to be able to communicate with you.
There's one more thing on here that I think is missing. Like, I think just sometimes when I get criticized, when I think that it's, when I feel like maybe it's unfair or ill-informed, whatever, I tend to become maybe a little bit more stubborn in the opposite direction. So, I don't know, I didn't really see that on this.
That's not in here, but it is, I might not have it on in the deck, but that is, how many people, when they are told that they did something wrong, are, like, their sense of ethics and fairness gets triggered, right? I am like that. I'll give you a good example. When I think I was in third grade, we used to, I don't know why my teacher did this thinking back, but she used to put the spelling words on the ceiling so that during the week we could look up and we could learn how to spell the words. And this is, I'm almost 55, so this is like 40 some years ago this happened. I still remember it. I'm still mad about it.
We had a substitute teacher one Friday. I love that joy. We had a substitute teacher one Friday come in, and of course he did not know to take the words off of the ceiling. So when you're thinking, what do you do? Where do your eyes go when you're thinking? Up, right? That's how a lot of us think. We look up. So of course, and I was really proud of my spelling. I was really good at spelling. I looked up at one point. The teacher came over. He picked up my paper, and he ripped it in half. And he said, "You were cheating." And I said, "I was not cheating." And I was so mad. For years, I have been mad about that. That's what you're talking about, that sense of like getting, being told that you did something wrong. And you, I know I wasn't cheating. I was naughty. I don't even know where the word was that I was looking that was on the ceiling. But yeah, that sense of ethics can make us dig our heels in and get stubborn. Yeah, especially, so this, that might not fall under rejection sensitive dysphoria, but it definitely happens. Yes.
I remember when I was in junior high school, we had to do a report on an artist, and I did my research and wrote the report on Thomas Gainsborough. And the teacher gave me an F for copying out an encyclopedia, because I write like an encyclopedia.
Yep, that's a great example. That's a great example. Okay. Let's talk about some other reasons why criticism might be more difficult for autistic folks. And I think a lot of us, we've already kind of talked about this, but a lot of autistic folks have intrusive thoughts. So these are thoughts that pop into our head when we don't want them to. Why did that person do this to me? How come they made fun of me? How come they didn't understand that I was trying to do something?
And I like that picture.
I love this picture. These thoughts, guess what time of the day these thoughts often come into our head?
For me, it's night.
Nighttime, right? When the lights are out, when everything is dark, when our body has time to kind of go back to rest and relax. This is often why a lot of autistic folks have problems with sleep, because the brain just is processing. So this can, if you do receive a criticism, it's not just like, I still don't know how people do this, but like my husband will walk into a restaurant, you know, tell them we're here, party for or whatever, and they're busy maybe, and somebody's like, okay, well, it's gonna be a few minutes. You know, and I pick up on that tone of voice and maybe the look on the face, and I think, well, that person was kind of annoyed with me, and my husband's like, what? He doesn't even see it, he doesn't notice it. So, but then I'll think about it later. Like, did I say something rude? Was I, you know? So it's these intrusive thoughts, I think, that can really impact us.
It could also be that you feel like the environment is being unfair, right? You could say,
exactly.
Hey, that was rude, like, this is not the right kind of service.
Yeah, yeah.
I should be getting, this is a terrible place, or you can get into that.
Yes, the kind of the more, like, right or wrong, like, that person shouldn't have been rude to me, that wasn't fair.
Right.
Exactly. And then the last reason why criticism can be harder is because most autistic folks, and we're learning more and more about this. I was at one of the Ascend presentations with the doctor. I think she was a psychiatrist that spoke. She was talking about kind of the fact that the autistic nervous system is more active. So there's more excitatory cells and less kind of inhibitory cells. So we go into fight or flight faster. We stay in fight or flight longer. And this is kind of the sympathetic nervous system that gets activated for a lot of autistic folks. And that's kind of the gas pedal. That's what allows us to, you said sometimes you want to fight back, right? It could be the, I'm going to move away from this situation because it's making me anxious or nervous, or it's the, I'm going to fight. So it's the fight, flight, or it also is the freeze. Fight, flight, or freeze. And how many people have received criticism and just couldn't respond to it, kind of froze up. Yeah, exactly. So this is more activated in the autistic, usually in most autistic folks, there's a higher stress response, higher stress, and it takes a lot more to get back to activate the opposite, the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the rest and relax. So we're actually gonna spend some time talking about strategies for that today. All right, so what can we do to manage criticism? I'll go into a few strategies and then we'll probably take a break. Would that be good, Camille, in like 10 minutes of break? Okay. So the first thing is to just raise your awareness
of what your criticism triggers are. So what are some of the things you know that you've heard from other people that really bother you? The criticism you've received that really bothers you. Yeah.
My criticism triggers would be the things that people can tell me when I was in school, college, and also probably the workplace a little bit. Mm-hmm. And also I have traumatic experience because of what happened to me in elementary school and also in college. Mm-hmm. So those are my criticism triggers.
Okay. Yeah, great. Others? Yes? When people tell me I didn't do this right, but they didn't really give me instructions on how to do it. Did I capture that? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I did it the way I thought you told me to do it. Exactly. Other, yes?
When someone attributes judgment of my values, like if they say something like you are untrue, that was a lie, or like, you know, you're gaslighting me, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Like somebody's attributing
negative
motivation on my part.
Yeah. Gaslighting is a big one for a lot of my clients because a lot of my clients are very direct and very honest. And if someone tells them something they know that person doesn't mean, that is a trigger for like just anger or anxiety. It could also be maybe fall into the criticism, but you're saying you want me to do it, but that's not what you want me to do. It's very confusing, and it can be definitely. And you had a criticism trigger.
You talked about this a little, but when people get mad at me for breaking a rule that no one told me about.
Yes, unwritten rules, right? Again, we need to go back to like, where's the manual? Where's the handbook for this? Yeah, unwritten rules. Anything else that people can think of?
Well,
yeah.
Yeah, a lot of situations, for whatever reason, the other person is choosing to be difficult. I have no control over what the other person chooses to do.
Yeah.
But because I have Asperger's and they don't, it's still my fault. It's always my fault when something goes wrong.
Yeah, so you're kind of the scapegoat, maybe. Yeah.
Exactly. Just attacking. Just attacking for no reason, even though you're trying to come up with like a conflict resolution.
Yep. So just raising some money, and for parents in the room too, what are your kids' triggers? Knowing what your kids' triggers might be. Like maybe it's something around, you know, video game use, or maybe it's something around cleaning or chores or things like that, that you know every time you bring it up, it's a trigger. And so knowing that, like, is there a different way to bring it up? Not necessarily. There isn't always, and we'll talk about the fact that criticism is a part of life. We can make it more constructive, though. So knowing if it's a trigger for your child or your adult child, maybe figuring out the words that work best or how to bring it up in a way that works best.
Well, I was also really upset with my performance review with my boss.
Yeah.
That was something that really set me back for a while.
So, and we'll talk about some strategies for maybe how to advocate for yourself in those kinds of situations.
No, I was very angry. I kind of, you know, I didn't say anything super, super bad, but
yeah.
I definitely wish that I was able to kind of calm down, take it, reassess, and have a meeting with him at a later time when I'm more collected.
Yeah, I'm gonna move on. Because actually some of the strategies that I have in a few minutes I think will help with that. So for criticism, we know that for a lot of autistic folks, criticism does activate that fight or flight. So the first thing that I have had a lot of clients come to me and say, my therapist started right away working on like cognitive behavioral strategies. And those are great, and CBT works for some people, but for a lot of autistic folks, before they can even work on some of those other strategies, they have to be able to get themselves to more of a place of like rest and relax. And so I wanted to actually ask you first, before I go over what things, this is one of my things that brings me back to rest. Ooh, it popped it. I love that. the rest or relax for me, it's
like holding on to something in my hand or maybe manipulating it. What helps for you to rest or relax to kind of calm you down? Yeah.
Yeah, I do that too, but it doesn't work enough for me, you know, some reason. Lately, I've really been into walking on wet grass.
Walking, like bare feet?
Yeah, walking on bare feet.
Right.
And before then, I was big into, you know, the beach walking, like if you're swimming in the ocean.
On the beach, yeah.
So, it's something that resets me if I do it long enough.
Okay, if you do.
It relaxes me. If I call that heat that I have, it's like for the physics guy, there's something called that thermodynamics, where the heat goes from hot to cold. So that's what it's doing. It's taking all my heat.
Reducing it.
And going to cold to an alternate state.
Yeah.
And then getting it out of my body. So I spent all day long trying to get this out of my body.
Yeah.
And then when the next person comes, I'm supposed to just be able to, you know, just not accept the criticism mentally or something.
Yeah. Yeah, and your
meditation talks about that. I've never really been able to do it better now.
Meditation. And this is really important too, is their meditation is wonderful, and for a lot of people, meditation works really well. I certainly see clients who, instead of meditation, they need those big movements. I need to walk, I need to swing, I need to pace, I need to actually have those, like, I mean, and people today, if you feel like you want to get up, if you want to move around, if you want to pace or rock, pay attention to your body if that's what feels good. I love your kind of description of bringing the hot down to the cool. This is kind of the hot emotions that we bring down to kind of the rest and relax. What else helps people rest and relax?
She even spots when, okay, you need to calm down, Mom. So she'll sit on my lap.
A dog, did you say?
Yeah, my service dog.
Oh, your service dog,
she'll
okay.
Sit on my lap and be like, okay, you need to self-regulate. You're little. She can sense when I'm like,
Yeah. Pets are huge regulators. They can be. Sometimes cats, not so much. Sometimes cats are, but they do it on their own terms. What else helps people calm down? Yes.
What helps me to calm down is revisiting my childhood. Like, I know probably not too much of the bad, but kind of like what I need more of what I was missing. And I also like to turn to reading and maybe like learning more about the nervous system and autism would definitely help me.
Yeah. Great. So reading. Yeah. What else? What else do people like to use to calm down? Deep breathing. Yeah.
I sing to myself too.
I love that. For a lot of autistic folks, singing, humming, even talking can be a stim. That's one of the first behaviors that I did as a child. My mom said when I was a baby, like 2 weeks old, I would go up the scale and down the scale and up the scale and down the scale. I ended up becoming a singer, but because I have so much anxiety about singing, I don't like to sing. So
that is so cool because my mom said when I was little heart beat to talk,
so humming or those scales going up and down the scales, I used to also get in trouble with my friends a lot because they would say, you know what, Diana, we'd rather listen to the song than you hum. And, you know, I was like, oh, okay, I didn't even know I was doing it. Sorry, yes. So here you actually named a whole bunch of these. So for many people, those bigger movements are helpful. Those, it could be you know, shaking your hands. It could be like patting your thighs. It could be, I loved spinning. When I was little, my hands had calluses all over them because we had these bars and I would just spin. Every recess, I would just spin. I also love roller coasters and swings and stuff like that. I'll go on any ride, anytime. I don't care. It could be fidget items, and I'll show you a couple of examples. This would be considered a fidget item, but there's all kinds. It could be weighted blankets. Some people like that feeling of a pressure on them, and I also know some people say weighted blankets are too hot for me, but there's now weighted animals, like stuffed animals, that just to have it like in your lap can feel really nice.
pets.
Have weighted pillows.
Weighted pillows.
Left.
Yep.
Like mini ones you can put in.
Yep. It could be a pillow. For some people, it's music or even white noise. Or there's different. There's like white noise, brown noise. There's all kinds of different noises. It could be speaking, humming, or singing. I love that you do that too. It could be engaging in your interests. So I know for me, sometimes when I'm feeling dysregulated, I like to do math. Nobody understands that, but that's what I like to do. Oh, sometimes people like to stim. Yeah, does anyone else like to stim while listening to music? Yeah, or walking. And then there's grounding techniques. So I want to kind of go over just to make sure that you have some actual tactical strategies for how to ground yourself, because this is particularly helpful when you're going in for your review with your boss or when you're going into maybe a difficult conversation with a family member. And then I think, maybe should we save the grounding techniques for after the break because it's 11? All right, let's do that. Let's go ahead. Do we do a 10-minute break? Okay, so if you're feeling like, oh my gosh, this person just said something to me that really upset me, before you react, you could use some of these grounding techniques. Wait a minute, I'm gonna buy myself some time. I might do that. I might do, this one's much faster. This is called box breathing. So I'm gonna have you do it with me. Go ahead and take a nice deep breath in. 2, 3, 4. Hold it. 2, 3, 4. And exhale through your mouth. 2, 3, 4. So the one thing we want to make sure we're doing when we do this is you want, when you breathe in, you want your this part to go out, because if your shoulders are going up when you're taking a deep breath, you're breathing really shallowly. When we do it from the diaphragm here, that pumps oxygen up to the brain. A lot of autistic folks are kind of walking around constantly stressed and tense and breathing shallowly. And so this deep breathing exercise can really help to get that relaxation, slow the heart rate. You could hold an object and, you know, and focus on the smoothness of the object or the texture of the object. That's another grounding technique. You could think of three positive things that are happening in your life. You could count backwards. You could recite the alphabet. If you're really good, you could recite the alphabet backwards. I can't do that. I do math. Like I said, I will do sort of calculations in my head. These are all ways that we can kind of bring ourselves back to the present moment instead of going down the road of those intrusive thoughts that often cause more anxiety. There's a couple other ways to do tactile grounding. So again, this is just helping us calm our nervous system. You can try this right now. Take your hands and just put them in front of you and push them together. Just push them together. Sometimes this will kind of break that loop, the anxiety loop, and you can just kind of feel those, what it feels like in your hands. Push those together. You can rub your hands. You can rub your, like, the back of your hands, rub your arms. You can pat your legs. This is helpful sometimes. These are all tactile strategies, and it's kind of, again, I keep going back to the way you described, it's taking the hot down to the cold. I love that description. It's taking the big emotions and kind of turning the volume down a little bit. Some people find that if they put something cold, like on their chest or the back of their neck, that can break that kind of anxiety or rejection reaction. Some people really love to get in the shower, or I had, when I worked in a hospital, I had a medical room that was my office, and I was dealing a lot with patients who had dementia, and they had a lot of dementia-related behavior, so a lot of, like, aggression sometimes, and so I was called in to help calm them down, and I would absorb all that energy, because that's what we do often, and then when I'd go back to my office, I would be pretty activated. So I had this soap next to my duct, next to my sink in my office, and I would just wash my hands, and I would get like lavender smell or eucalyptus, things that I liked the smell of, and that would kind of help calm me down. A lot of autistic people have a complicated relationship with water. Love water, but hate being wet. Love water, but hate being cold. Love to be in the shower, hate to get out of the shower. There's all kinds of water-related stuff. You can just push your feet into the ground and notice how that feels. That's another tactile grounding. Could be stretching. So it could be little stretches, like stretching your neck.
could be bigger stretchers, like really, you know, really stretching up and feeling, and just kind of, again, grounding yourself back into your body. And does anyone in here have a sensory room? Oh my gosh. Okay. So you don't have to have a whole separate room in your house. You could even create just a sensory space. But for a lot of autistic folks, the day is very stimulating. Social interactions, stimulated. Noises, stimulating. Tastes, parents wanting things from you. Parents wanting things from your kids. Parents are probably overstimulated too. So having sensory objects, and this will be different for every single one of you. I love things like dark. I like a dark room, so this would be more my sensory room. And you don't need to go out and buy a bunch of stuff for this, but it could even be like a piece of a remnant of carpet that you have in the room that you could run your fingers over. That's what I used to do when I was little. I had a blanket, and there was like an edging on the blanket, and I just put it under my fingernails. I just rubbed my, you know. So it could be something like that. It could be like a beanbag. If you're more sensory seeking and that helps you calm down, it could be more bright lights. And there's other items. So this would be a sensory item that might help kind of bring your body to rest and relax. But there's all, does anyone, well, I won't ask this question, but a lot of times picking skin or fingers or things like that is something, yeah. So these rings are really nice to stop from picking, but still give you the kind of the sensation. Sometimes people want something like a smooth wooden, there's these Stig Mags, there's all kinds of different things that will feel good in the hands that kind of keep you busy, that can help us go back to kind of rest and relax. And a lot of these things, autistic adults will tell me, oh, I did that when I was younger, but I always got in trouble for it, so I stopped doing it. So we'll often encourage people to think about what did you like to do as a kid that you got in trouble for? Can you work that back into your adult life? Is that something that helps calm your nervous system down?
What is that?
These? They're called Stig Mags. They're like magnets. So you can build stuff with them. There's just something kind of sensory. I don't know, it just feels good. So, and there's all kinds of different things like this. Okay, so I spent a lot of time on the regulation strategies because that tends to be when you notice that you're flying off the handle, when you notice that you're saying things you don't really want to say, or you're so upset that you can't listen to the other person, this is often when we need to kind of go to that rest and relax strategies. And I often will tell people, even at work, can you build a little sensory area at your work? Maybe it's having like marbles in your pocket that you can just put your hands in your pocket. Maybe it's going to the bathroom and just sitting for 5 minutes and closing your eyes and listening to music. It could be anything, but is there a way that you can kind of create that sensory space for yourself? Okay, let's talk about some actual strategies then for when you're facing criticism, some cognitive and behavioral strategies. And the first would be, in the moment, what can you do when you're receiving that criticism? Now, again, you might find that you're in a situation where you receive the criticism and you couldn't respond, and you just, you know, think about it later, and then you're like, I wish I'd said this or I wish I'd said that. You could always circle back to the person if it makes sense. But in the moment, one of the things to recognize is that you can just listen. First is pause and breathe and use some of those strategies we talked about. Second is listen actively. So let's say someone tells you, I don't think you should have done that. Our reaction might be, you don't know why I did that. You don't know why I made that decision. You don't know this. I did it. If we can actually just take a step back and say, can you tell me a little bit more? Why do you think that? Or why did you say that? So we're listening actively. We're maybe asking questions and asking the person, why did you say that? Or what did you mean by that? So listening, and then listen to their answer. We want to try to separate our feedback from the criticism. A lot of times when we receive criticism, it feels like I'm the bad person. I'm a failure. I think I heard somebody say, I feel like I'm the failure.
But people have criticism all the time. They give criticism, they receive criticism. If you receive criticism, it does not mean you're a failure. So is there a way you can tell yourself, wait a minute, this is just somebody telling me something, doesn't feel good, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's personal, that there's something wrong with me. So that's a little bit harder to do. You can ask for clarification. I heard somebody say, one thing that really bothers me is when I get told that I did something wrong, but I actually didn't know how to do it. They didn't give me instructions. So if somebody's coming to you and saying, you did something wrong, you can say, can you tell me how it was wrong? Can you tell me what you would have liked me to do differently? I would like to understand that. It's hard to stay open-minded, especially when you feel like you're being attacked or criticized, but trying to stay open-minded. And then can you look for some constructive elements to the criticism? So I'll go back to that example of when my friends told me, we don't want you humming in the car, we'd rather listen to the music. That hurt my feelings, of course. And I didn't even realize I was doing it, and I did all the time. So, but when I kind of took a step back and I realized, you know what, even though humming is how I regulate my nervous system, it doesn't mean it's regulating their nervous system. Maybe it's actually not good for their nervous system, right, to hear me humming all the time. And so I have to be able to step out of my own personal experience in that moment and think about what impact might this be having on somebody else? And does it actually make sense that it might be better for them if I'm not humming all the time? And then respond with gratitude when appropriate. I can tell you as a parent, when I've had to gently let my children know that something they're doing might not be the best thing, and they say, thank you, Mom, for letting me know that, it's the best feeling in the world. I'm giving them my advice or I'm giving them my thoughts because I want them to be happy. I want them to do well in this world. And so when I am actually telling them, here's one thing I think could work better, or tell me when you do this, why you're doing that, let's think about some other things that could, and they thank me, our relationship grows. So thanking somebody, thank you for giving me that. Yes?
When is a criticism actually not a criticism? How can you figure out maybe it's the reality or the fact that people are telling it?
Yeah.
And how can we be self-critic? You know, this phrase is a lot of stuff they say, be self-critic, but not everybody does it.
Yeah.
Not like it.
Yeah.
How can we learn that?
So, and your question is, how can you learn if it's not actually a criticism, but someone's just making a statement? Is that kind of what you're saying? Or
stand on the side and listen to what they just said and don't be so, as we just said, jumping up and being, responsive. So, and think about it. Maybe they're right.
Yeah. So, what if somebody is actually criticizing you and they have a good point, or they're giving you some kind of feedback and they have a good point? How can you recognize that? Well, sometimes we won't recognize it right in the moment because if that nervous system is activated, it's hard to think clearly. But maybe even afterwards, if you can't do it in the moment. And in the moment, I think the way to do it is to listen actively, to ask questions, to try to understand more about that other person's perspective and why they're telling you this. I think that can help. But even if it doesn't help, afterwards you can reflect on what did they tell me? What part of that could be right? And maybe go back to the person. Yeah?
I think an element of Sarkis's question might have been, how do we kind of criticize ourselves, if that's the right word, or, you know, try to improve ourselves, but also have good self-esteem, something like that.
I think that's just a lifelong journey, right? And if we think about even, like, I think about things today that I knew I was right about 10 years ago. 100% I knew I was right about, and now I'm like, oh, maybe I wasn't so right. Or maybe that person that told me something, you know, 10 years ago, they really were right. So I think it's just stepping back and asking yourself, like, is there another way to look at this? You know, is there another way that my behavior could be impacting people? Is there another way that when I say this, is there a different outcome? Like, maybe the thing I'm doing, here's one thing I would say, is if you're doing the same thing over and over again, you're getting the same result, that would be a time to say, what could I do differently? Maybe it's something about my approach.
maybe I need to shift, if I can, my approach. Yes?
Also, we have to be able to evaluate if the criticism is accurate.
We do, yeah. But that's sometimes hard to do in the moment, isn't it, Camilla? Especially when you're feeling hurt. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, sometimes people disguise their criticism.
Yes.
By using sarcasm or phrasing it as a compliment. Like,
right.
You haven't blown anything up this week. Congratulations.
Right.
You did really good with that today. Why can't you do this all the time?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That kind of compliment.
Yeah. We can see this is, I'm going to do probably almost, you know, an hour, I mean, maybe close to 2 hours on this, because this is really complicated. Criticism is so complicated. I'll try to move through the rest of this too, because I know Camilla also wanted to bring up something. Here is kind of like what you both, I think, were asking too, is when do we need to take responsibility, maybe, for that criticism? Maybe the person is right, like that I really could do something differently. And then you want to try to make a plan for improvements. Camilla. Oh, okay, okay, all right. So a plan for improvement. So, you know, and I'm just using personal examples because I think sometimes that brings it to light. But I have a problem where I talk too loud. And partly I think it's because I just have a hard time modulating the volume of my voice. But also if I'm talking about my areas of high interest, I get really loud. If I'm talking about things I love, I get really loud. If I'm talking about fairness and ethics, I get really loud. Also, when I'm mad, sometimes I get loud. And so I've had people in my life say to me, why are you always so angry? You're so loud. And I will have to say to them, okay, next time I go into an interaction, I'm gonna try to lower my voice. I'm gonna try to kind of be aware that my loud voice might be actually a sensory trigger for somebody. So I might make a plan for improvement. I also have told my husband, can you please tell me if I'm getting too loud? Because then people think I'm mad at them, and that's not what I want people to think. So I try to make a plan in those areas where I've received feedback kind of over and over again. I think exactly what you two are talking about, reflecting on the criticism. Maybe we do it in the moment. Maybe we do it days or even weeks later. That's okay. But thinking about, okay, when that person said that thing to me, maybe they were right in some way. Can I look at that? I think there is advocating for yourself. We're going to talk about how to do that. There are just people who are going to say things that are unkind, and we're not going to be able to correct them. And that just, oh, I hate that. But you know what? Sometimes we just have to say, I'm just going to let that go. I just can't do anything about it. Maybe it's somebody that, you know, gave you the bird on the freeway or something, and you were just trying to let them in. Like, you were trying to be nice, and they got mad at you. And you know what? You're just never going to fix that person. That criticism, just let it go. Keep the big picture in mind. Recognize that criticism is a part of life. None of us is going to get out of this life without being criticized at least one more time. You know, today, tomorrow, sometime this week, it's just going to happen. One of the things I really like, because I don't like to be surprised, is I like to plan for things. I'm just going to plan that if I'm going to get criticized at some point, I'm going to plan for it, and I'm just going to plan for what I need to do when that happens. And then focus on the things you do have control over, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. Yeah.
How does it relate to standing up for yourself versus not standing up for yourself? When you get criticized, this feeling that, you know, like, I need to stand up for myself here.
Yeah.
Versus saying, you know, if you don't say anything, it's like, oh, you're just like a pushover.
Yeah.
How is that?
I'm going to give you a strategy for that, because that's such an important question. Yeah, she was saying, when do you know when you need to stand up for yourself versus let it go? It's on the other hand. You
yes. One thing I want to mention is that that people have different opinions, and if their opinion is not in line with your opinion, that doesn't mean that they are against you or they say something against you.
Yeah, yeah.
Just leave and let it be.
Yes. So sometimes we get stuck in this, like, I'm right, this other person is wrong. It takes a lot of cognitive energy to open the door to say, you know what, maybe we're both right, or maybe we just have a difference of opinions. Yeah, that's a great point. Yes.
How do you know the difference between between criticism that makes you want to improve it yourself or criticism that makes you feel bad about yourself?
Yeah, I think you could actually have both at the same time, which is even more confusing. There, sometimes the criticisms or feedback I've gotten from people has made me feel really bad in the moment, but it's also maybe something I want to improve on. So I think both can be true, actually. I think where I would say, like, unfair or unkind criticism, like when someone's calling you a name, when someone is berating you, when someone is being like really aggressive towards you or making you feel, you know, like you're stupid, those kinds of things, I think those are criticisms. Like, I just don't want to waste my time on those. They still hurt, but I feel like that's really about that person. That's not about me, and I can't control that person right now. Someone wants to come to me and say, hey, look, I'd rather you do it this way, or I'd rather you say it that way, or in this situation, could you not do that? I'm more willing to listen to that than if someone's gonna attack me. Those are the kinds of things I think sometimes we just wanna let those go. But let's talk about like what to know, what to do. To your question, Mina, has anyone heard about values? Do you have an idea of what values are? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so sometimes it's kind of a moral compass. What else could it be? What else could values be? Yeah. Yeah. So and then it can become your moral compass. So values are the things in our lives that bring our lives joy and meaning and purpose. So they're the things at the end of our life we want to look back on and say, that's where I put my time and energy because that's what was important to me. So if we think about it that way, what are some things that bring your life joy and meaning and purpose?
Relationships,
yeah, great.
Working on my special interests.
Absolutely, working on your special interests. So fulfilling, yeah, what else?
Like Greg said, working on my interests, what I'm interested in.
Yeah, working on your interests, yeah, exactly.
Pets and animals?
Pets and animals, absolutely. Health.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Health. Anything else? Yeah.
Helping others.
Helping others. Absolutely. This is why we're here today, too, right? This is such a great, incredible group of people. So I see a bunch of those up here. And these are some common values. These are some values that I hear people say. They're certainly not an exhaustive list. So what we want to do when we're going to react or not react to criticism is we want to have a moral compass or a compass that points us toward our true north, toward what is truly important to us. Because those criticisms, our thoughts and emotions that we have, it can be a little bit like being a boat in an ocean and just being bombarded. On this side, it's what people are saying to you. On this side, it's my emotions and my thoughts. It's nice to have a compass, which are your values that keep you pointed in the right direction. And then you use those values to choose what behavior you want to do in a certain situation. Today we're talking about when you're criticized, but it could be any decision that you want to make. Does anyone have an idea of why we like to use values? Why would we use values as kind of our compass pointing us toward our true north? Yeah.
The word that I can't get something from my tongue. It's you're not going to compromise. And this is something that you hold near and dear, and you want to stick to that and not go off script.
Yes. It's something you hold near and dear. Yeah, definitely.
The values are kind of like the North Star. They're always there no matter what situation you're in. So useful for guidance.
There, and so both of those, absolutely, plus the fact that values tend to be consistent. So you said relationships. Was relationships a value for you 5 years ago? Yeah, it was probably even 10 years ago, your value. It will probably be your value 10 years from now. So values tend to be really consistent for us, where our thoughts and our emotions and our situations that we're experiencing, those change all the time. Those changes feel really chaotic. So if we can go back and anchor ourselves to our values, that is really helpful. Those values don't change for us very often. So how do we do that? Let's say somebody has criticized you. Let's say it's someone that's close to you, a parent, a partner, a friend. What are your choices in that moment? What kind of behavior how could you react if somebody criticizes you?
I may get a little sad and put on a frown or a sad face, and I may go into an autistic meltdown.
So you might act like lash out a little bit, not on purpose, but yeah, okay. What else might you do if somebody criticizes you? What are some options?
Overreact.
Overreact? What's the opposite of overreact? Shut down, right?
Underreact.
So you might, what's that?
Underreact,
exactly. We might lash out. We might not say anything. There's so many different choices that we have. We can't really choose or control what other people do to us. We can't always choose or control our thoughts or emotions, but we most of the time, not always, if we're having a meltdown or something like that, but most of the time we can choose our behaviors. So in a situation like this where somebody has criticized you, I like the stop and reflect. Just give yourself a minute before you answer, before you say anything. Give yourself a moment and reflect on your values. This person is really important to me. Relationships are really important. So I don't want to overreact. I don't want to lash out because that might impact my relationship. And then choose your action. Maybe I tell this person, I need 5 minutes. I want to answer you, but I'm feeling kind of criticized right now. I need a few minutes to understand what questions I have for you or what information I'd like to get. We also talked a little bit about perspective taking, but just understanding sometimes people will criticize you because they're having a bad day. It has nothing to do with you. Sometimes they give you a criticism because they might be neurodivergent and they're just being honest. They don't mean to be critical. Maybe they're just being honest or they're misinterpreting something.
How are you supposed to know when that's the case?
So I think that's why we buy ourselves time. So you might even ask a question like, are you okay? Or it seems like you're upset. Is there something that you know is going on for you today? And that is hard to know. It's really hard. But in the moment, it can help reduce our kind of hurt if we can remind ourselves, this might not be about me, actually. This might be about them, right? It's hard, though. It's hard to know the difference.
Yeah, and lots of times they just deny it.
And they do. And that's about them, though. That's about them. And that's something that you can't necessarily control. But you can also say, well, at least we can move away from the, like, it's my fault, because I think that's what a lot of people internalize to, you know what, maybe it isn't my fault, actually. Maybe it's just they're having a bad day. Doesn't mean that takes the hurt away completely, but it might take it away a little bit.
Could it be also the opposite way? You might be thinking it's always the other person's fault, whereas you might
Yeah, maybe it is. And that's when, you know, kind of what we were talking about before. Do I need to actually think, is there something I could be doing different? Okay, another thing to think about is to notice your thoughts when you're being criticized. Because most of the time when we are criticized, it first might activate that nervous system, but then usually it will activate thoughts. And there are certain thoughts that most of us have that we call sticky thoughts. These are thoughts that pop into our head kind of over and over again. And we want to be aware of our sticky thoughts because they usually, our thoughts have a huge impact on how we feel. And if we don't recognize those sticky thoughts that make us feel the worst, they can, like this wave, they can kind of knock us over. We get controlled by those thoughts. Yes.
Yep.
I
wonder what your thoughts on dealing with that. I don't know if it's a digression from what you're talking about. The sticky thoughts sound like it was in the ballpark.
Yeah, so Greg and I did not coordinate this. That was actually beautiful. So here are some examples of sticky thoughts that we might have. Now, they might be triggered by somebody else criticizing us, but you're right. For a lot of us, we are our worst critic. We go immediately to, I'm not good enough. Or if I don't do this perfectly, I'm going to fail. Or everyone is judging me. Something bad always happens to me. It could be I have to control everything, or everything will go wrong. People don't like me. I can't cope with this. Has anyone had any of these thoughts before? I know I have. Absolutely. So these are our sticky thoughts, and they often do start to get activated when we feel like or we have been criticized. So what I want to say is these thoughts have a lot of power over us if we let them. But there are actually some ways that we can strip those thoughts of their power so they don't make us feel quite so bad. So let me show you a couple of those strategies. One, and this one seems so simple, but it's actually really powerful, is to just tell yourself, oh, I'm having a thought. How many of us believe when we have a thought that it's 100% true? Yeah, I do. Yeah, and go ahead, feel free, put your hand up high. So, of course we do, because our brain generated it. So if we have the thought, we're probably or we're likely to believe it. Our thoughts are not often 100% true, especially when they're sticky thoughts. They're kind of all or nothing, they're black or white. And we know things are black or white or all or nothing when we have thoughts like everybody hates me, or nobody understands me, or people always, you know, misinterpret me. Those are usually clues to us that they're sticky thoughts, they're kind of all or nothing. Those are usually not 100% true. So we can separate ourselves a little bit from those thoughts by just saying, oh, there's a thought. Not there's truth, but there's a thought that I'm having. I love this one. I'm having that same old thought again. Because, and I know as a brain scientist, a lot of the thoughts that we have over and over again, we have because we've had them lots of times before. So they've been reinforced in our brain. So we're actually not having those thoughts because they're true. We're having those thoughts because they're now a habit. So if we can say, oh, there's that habit, that thought's popping up again. It's not true, but it's just going to pop up because I've had it so many times. This also gives us a moment to say, you know, I've had this thought before. Maybe somebody criticizes me, and then I have the thought, I'm a failure. That makes me feel shame. But then I know, oh, somebody said that once to me before, and actually they thought they were helping me, or they thought they were telling me something I didn't know. They weren't actually criticizing me. So I can actually go back and remember, there were times I felt like I was being criticized, but I actually wasn't being criticized, or it wasn't really as bad as I thought it was going to be. So that's another way to strip those thoughts of their power. You can ask yourself, is this a helpful thought? Is it motivating me to do something different, or is it making me feel just really overwhelmed? And I know there's folks in here who practice like mindfulness and meditation. How many people have done mindfulness or meditation? Yeah, so this strategy is kind of like watching the thought come into your brain, noticing it, oh, there's that thought, I'm a failure, and then just letting it drift off. So we don't want to push it away too soon. We want to see that it's there, but we also don't want to cling to it. That's kind of at the crux of mindfulness. And then I'm not actually going to go through the thought record because I don't think we have time for that today. I'd rather actually talk about just advocating for yourself. And I'm just going to give you a quick strategy you can use. Let's say you've thought about your values. Somebody has given you some criticism and you don't think it's fair, or you don't think it's nice, or you need to learn a little bit more. We're gonna use the Dear Man strategy, and this is kind of a strategy for setting boundaries. And the D is for describe the situation, and when we do that, we're gonna try to describe it in just very like straightforward terms. Here's what happened. Almost like you're a scientist writing down your observations. E is for express how it made you feel, assert what you want the person to do differently next time, reinforce, why is this going to be beneficial for both of us? And then we want to try to stay mindful. My goal is to just kind of explain this to you and set a boundary. This is a strategy that's lots of studies have been done on it. I don't like the appear confident because I feel like for a lot of autistic people, trying to fake something that you don't actually feel is really difficult. But it's more about just not apologizing for setting a boundary, I think, is a better way to think about it, and then negotiate if necessary to get what you want.
This is what you do when you're feeling criticized.
Yeah, if you're feeling, you're advocating for yourself. If you're feeling, so here's an example. This is actually a really common one. So a client might say to me, you know, I was with my partner out in public, and I'll use my own example, and my voice was too loud, and my husband went, God, can you please be quiet? He would not do that, but you know, let's say he does. I might say to him, I'm going to describe the situation. So describing, I'm just going to keep it pretty straightforward. When you criticize the way that I handled the situation in front of others, it actually made me shut down. You could have your own words. It made me angry. It made me embarrassed, whatever it was. That's the describe.
the E express, how does it make you feel? And here I'm not going to say you were rude, right? Because that's not going to help keep those communication lines open. I'm going to say I feel upset and embarrassed when you do that in front of other people. That's the express. The assert would be, it would be more helpful for me if you talk to me about this in private. Or maybe we develop some kind of a signal you can give me out in public. But that will be more helpful for me. I won't shut down. Why is this going to be helpful for both of us? This will make it easier for me to respond and concentrate on what you're saying. Now, this one's a little bit, you know, here, maybe he's just telling me to be quiet. But in a different situation, it could be somebody saying, you didn't do the laundry, or you didn't take care of this task that I wanted you to do. Yeah.
So if you are discussing with your neurodivergent child something, and you're trying to, so let's say that they get very loud, like you just,
yeah,
using your example,
yeah,
and you want to help them socially, could you anticipate some of these strategies and just say, like, put myself in their shoes, what would it feel like?
Yeah.
And just sort of imagine them doing all these things back to you.
Yeah.
So then you just sort of get to that place where I'd be like,
yeah,
hey, you know, I have a suggestion.
Yeah.
You have a signal, you know.
Yeah.
Does this make any sense?
I love that. Did everybody hear? So what you're saying is that instead of actually relying on your loved one who might be neurodivergent to give you all this information, you think about how they would say this to you. That they might say something to you like, you know what, when you criticize me in public, it's really hard for me. And so, yeah, you get to kind of what they would like you to do differently. Now, I would always say check in with them. You know, hey, I was thinking about sometimes when we're in this situation and I have to give you some constructive feedback, I do it this way. But it sounds like that doesn't work very well. So what are some ways you'd like me to do it? What would help you stay focused? I'm going to have to give you feedback because that's how life works. We give each other feedback. But how can I do it in a way that's going to feel like you can really hear me or it's going to feel useful to you? Yeah, I love that. I love the thinking about that. Okay, I think we're going to kind of end it here. I do just want to remind people that there are lots of ways if you are dealing or struggling with criticism, it is really bringing you down. We talked about kind of why that nervous system is more active in autistic folks and how that activation all the time kind of consistently can lead to burnout or shutdown. It's important that you all get the support you need. So whether that's through therapy or groups, this Ascend group is lovely, your friends, family. There are even some medications, and I can't recommend any specific medications for anybody, but sometimes there are medications that can help that nervous system be a little bit less active. And then I just want to remind you all that you are not problems to be solved. You are amazing, beautiful people. Not everybody's going to get you. Not everybody's going to get you all the time. And so just practice, you know what? I am who I am. I'm going to stick with the people that get me. And and then I also have my contact information, my email, and my website.
Say, for the sake of the people listening to the audio recording, how they can get in contact with you.
Yes, so my email address is my first name, Diana, D-I-A-N-A, dot, my last name, Partovi, P-A-R-T, as in Tom, O, V as in Victor, I, and it's at protonmail.com. And then my website is calneuropsych.com.